Thank you so much, Steve, for your answer.
Steve Dale. Weekly Pet Smarty Pants on Bill Mahler's show on WGN Radio. You know, every cat is different. Every dog is different. It sounds like your kitty is just having a good time.
Steve, every time you're on, I feel so blessed to hear you, and you always have wonderful things to say.
And, Steve, you had Miss Meowski on this morning. It's very exciting.
Yes, I love Miss Meowski. Well, you know what? Most people buy, for the holidays now, a gift for their pets. You heard me right. And not only for your pets, even if you don't have a pet, you have a friend, relative, neighbor, someone who has a pet. And now it has become common for people to buy gifts. So we had all these holiday gifts. In fact, Stephanie Menendez, the wonderful producer of Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
She doesn't do Gary anymore?
No. You have to keep up.
I'm that's never
the playbook.
Here
you're beyond it. But she was kind enough to do a video. It'll be up at WGNradio.com in a couple of days, and you'll be able to see all the gifts we talk about. I suppose our segment's already been archived at WGNradio.com/Steve Dale.
Long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free while the earth was being born, but the loveliest of them all was the unicorn.
All together now. You know this song.
Why would we be playing this song?
Well, because it means a whole lot to Chicagoans, and one person who can tell us about it. In fact, most people could tell us about it who have been in Chicago long enough, who grew up watching Ray Rayner and a segment called Ark in the Park. But one guy who was there for a lot of that is Mark Rosenthal. He is the curator emeritus at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago. And we're going to be talking about one of your favorite topics, one of mine, zoos.
Yeah.
Don't you love it? Yeah. And you think
where
this
does that word come from? Zoo? Mark,
well,
any idea?
Mark?
Zoological, of course, but
right. It was coined in the, I want to say the early 1800s at the London Zoo. There was a song that was written. It was something like, I don't have the exact lyrics, but take me out to the zoo or a day at their strolling in the zoo, something like that, where they shortened it.
Talk about handling a question out of left field, but that's pretty good. And the other thing that I know, it's not really zoos. It's zoological parks and gardens. Isn't that how most zoos years ago, and even today, many around the world identify themselves? It's not only the animals, it's the plants.
Well, not only the animals and the plants. For example, the San Diego Zoo, the plants collection is probably worth more than the animal collection because
really?
Of the uniqueness of the plants. And nowadays, more zoos are less identified as zoological park or zoological garden than they are as conservation areas for animals. So it's a new trend that's happening.
Now, I mentioned earlier when I was introducing the segment that I remember the Brooklyn Zoo when I was a kid, and it was a pretty shabby place. It was cages and concrete, basically, and animals were pacing. I just remember that image of the cats, the big cats just pacing like they were crazed. And what a contrast to what zoos have become today.
Well, many of the, again, there's a trend more toward, I guess you would call a learning, education. You learn from the past to move toward new things in the future. And many zoos are embracing that. And there's now zoo consortium that are talking about better facilities at zoos, not only in the United States, but worldwide. So there are standards now for the zoo association.
And they create more of the natural habitat that the individual animals would naturally be comfortable in because it's like what their home world was like.
You're trying to give people an understanding of the animals in nature, and more zoos are looking at trying to do things for the animals in nature because nature is shrinking. And a zoo's role has started to change rather than just exhibition. It's what can you do for the animals that are out in the wild.
Species preservation.
Yes, which is in the wild is shrinking.
Now, so there's two topics there to talk about. One is what zoos are doing at the zoo itself. You mentioned the exhibits and how they look different. Mark, is that important to the people that walk by that visit the zoo, or is it important to the animals? And talk about how that may or may not matter when it comes to enrichment, and how that word I just used is really where it's all about.
Well, I think it's important to both. It's important to the people for the perception of how the animals are being taken care of in a zoo. Or at the same time for the animals, it's very important for the territory. Animals have territory. The zoo is an artificial territory for them. And you have to try and meet many of their needs, shelter, food, water, etc. And enrichment in a zoo is an attempt in many different ways to replicate that as much as is possible. Example, when I was at Lincoln Park Zoo, we had the tigers outside, and we had a very big spring-loaded, it was actually a garage door kind of apparatus we had, where the tigers had to jump up to get some treat that was there. And they'd work for a long time to get that small treat. But they were active, and it was as if they were hunting. And now it's not the same, of course, but it utilized many of the same muscles, and it enriched their lives and kept them busy.
Yeah, mental activity, I think, is a very important part. When you see those animals pacing, or when I did when I was a kid, that's part of the brain kind of shutting down.
We all have very good internal clocks, and animals are the same. And a lot of times at zoos, when there is a standardized feeding time, animals kind of know when it is. They get a little bit excited because the food is there. And in many exhibits now, people are doing things for spreading out the feeding, so it's not all at one time. They have to work for the food, just as they would in nature. But again, it's both of those things. For the people, their perception of what the zoo is about, better quarters, and for the animals, better living conditions.
Now, the great debate. It's up to you to answer. Which zoo is older, Philadelphia or the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago? Only you know the answer to this question.
In the book that I did, Ark in the Park, The Story of Lincoln Park Zoo, University of Illinois Press, that's answered in that volume.
Is this a tease?
Apparently it is, yes.
So
well, I have the book here.
We have to look it up ourselves. Well,
what
you know,
would that be on?
Here's the reason why I bring it up, really, Mark.
It's indexed. You can find it.
It's because Lincoln Park Zoo has so much history intertwined in Chicago. Our telephone number, 312-981-7200. You could text us 24-720, and I know people have memories. Now, I've had Dr. Lester Fisher, past director of the Lincoln Park Zoo, good friend of yours, in that very seat you're in. And I remember he told one story, and you tell me how apocryphal, because some of these stories, as the years have gone by, I think they've changed a little bit. But, I was going to tell you one. I changed my mind. I'm going to tell you this story. Pat Sass told me this story. And she was the curator of the Children's Zoo at the time. And back in the day, it wasn't, sadly in a sense, unusual for zoos to take baby primates, great apes, gorillas, orangutans, chimpanzees away from mom. You'd raise them in the nursery in the Children's Zoo. It's what zoos did. Today, I understand zoos don't do that. And she took an orangutan for a TV appearance. And she had the orang baby all cuddled up, all in a blanket and everything. Just a little baby, all cuddled up. Grabbed a taxi right on Cannon Drive where the zoo is, got to the TV studio. As she's paying the taxi driver turns to her and says, "Lady, I must say, that's the ugliest baby I've ever seen." True story.
I wouldn't doubt it if Pat said that.
You're not buying the story, though?
No, I wouldn't doubt it.
Okay.
I've transported baby gorillas on a plane, and people weren't quite sure what they were looking at. So,
it looks like the Lincoln Park Zoo is the oldest zoo in the country.
Ah, you looked it up. You were cheating. Yes,
cheating.
As we talked. No, it is not. So you're working on a project that really looks at the history of zoos. Tell us a little about that.
Well, when I was working actively, there was a number of elder zoo statesmen, and I always wondered what legacy they were leaving behind for the newer, younger people. And at one time, I was a new and young kid, and I got to listen to some of the advice of my elders. And I noted that many of them were passing away and were no longer around to leave their legacy, their wisdom. about a number of bee mentors. And I was trying to figure out how to do that and how to capture it. And I had worked on a project with a friend of mine, Loretta Caravette from Caravette Productions, who has a very good producer-director, has won an Emmy, and she knew her business. And we kind of talked about it, and I needed her advice, and we came up with a project that essentially was trying to capture in audio and video interviews with these old lions, both women and men, who had been in the profession.
And in fact, the profession was mostly a male profession. We'll talk about that. Also, memories of names like Otto, Sinbad. I'm missing one. The big Chicago gorilla.
Well,
Sinbad,
Bushman.
Otto, Bushman, that's the one.
Steve Dale and our guest today,
Mark Rosenthal.
We're talking about zoos. And here's a text we got here. What happened as to the penguin exhibit? Why was it not successful?
I'm not sure I could comment on that exactly. I've been away from the zoo for a number of years. I know that
I'm not sure it wasn't successful. They're renovating, and instead of doing another penguin exhibit, maybe they're doing something else.
They're going to be doing Japanese macaques who winter well.
They would love it. Explain what these monkeys do. You can do this better than I.
Well, I'm not sure I could do it better than you, Steve, but the Japanese macaques have been at Lincoln Park Zoo historically, and in Japan, they are able to do well in colder climates.
Only monkey to do that.
And
Because they live in hot springs, too.
Well, they can utilize those if they are available.
And you should see their skin as a result of being in the hot. No, I'm just making that part up.
And they're group animals, and many times when you have a social animal.
But they'll make snowballs and stuff. I mean, really, seriously, they like the snow.
I think Steve knows more about it.
He doesn't know what to. He's looking at me like, do I believe this? They are monkeys that truly. Is it that they live at high altitudes in Japan?
Yes,
I believe
in
that's why.
The colder climates.
Well, why would they shut down the penguin exhibit and build this? Why this particular type of monkey would get its own full blown exhibit?
Well. As I say, they've had them at Lincoln Park before. They're a very dynamic exhibit. As a group animal, there's all kinds of things going on
with
the
what
group.
The refrigeration system was for the penguins, they can use it for these critters.
Well, there's certainly a cost factor when you have a refrigeration system to keep animals. The primates wouldn't need that, though.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the zoo archive project. So you go around and you interview a bunch of old-timers who have been around a while to get sort of a legacy and a feel for the history. And, you know, I was asking you before the show, I said, has anything like this ever been done before?
No, actually, this project has never been done before. No one has ever attempted to do it. We're the first ones to do this Zoo and Aquarium Video Archive project. We've expanded it even to Europe, where we did our first interview with the director of the Frankfurt Zoo, former director, Dr. Christian Schmidt. But when you think about it, there are many mentors, I suspect even in radio, that you would have loved to have talked to just to glean something from them about how they did it and what their problems were and what their solutions were. And they're no longer around, and you don't have that. Maybe there's an audio interview, maybe not. This way, there's going to be a record of these people that future generations within the zoo profession can learn from, and that's what we're hoping to do. So we have a website that people can...
Which is
www.zoovideoarchive.org.
Now, there's a couple of names that Chicagoans would know. One is Marlon Perkins from a mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. Did you have an opportunity? Now, he passed away years ago, but did you have an opportunity to ever talk with him?
I did have an opportunity to talk with Marlon. And to me, again, as mentor, he was my boyhood hero growing up on the original Zoo Parade show. So the opportunity to actually talk with him was wondrous to me. And if you can't talk to them originally, hopefully you can.
But what did he have to say? I mean,
well, he had a number of things to say. The funny thing was that when we did the interview, we were doing a video interview, and I had my one little camera, and here I was talking to a gentleman who'd been in television for a long time. And as we sat outside, he was so gracious. He said, "You know, Mark, if I were you, I'd probably place me over here because the sun will not hit me directly, and that will be softer light. And I'm going, whatever you say, Mr. Perkins, not a problem.
I see your book, by the way, has a large section. I was just looking through the index, and there's a lot in there about Marlon Perkins.
He was a big part of Chicago zoo history. He was the only zoo director ever to appear on the cover of Time magazine. So he had a big impact on Chicago, and because of television, it made him pretty famous all around. And as you're right, Mutual of Omaha.
In fact, I can hear his voice now.
Yeah.
It was not a quality, typically good broadcaster's voice, but it was quite unique.
But he had that gray hair and that look, and he was quite distinguished.
Oh, he didn't do anything. He just stood in the studio, and Jim was out wrestling the alligator, of course.
As a matter of fact, as part of the video archive project, we interviewed Jim Fowler. And Jim
He's
was
still
part
around.
Of
He's
Jim
still
is still around,
yeah.
Actively doing things. He had a lot to say about zoo design. He's been around. He's traveled extensively. And again, every little bit helps. I tell you one quick story about Gary Clark. And Gary Clark was the director of the Topeka Zoo. It's not a major zoo. It's not in a big city. But his zoo, when you would call it, they would say, "Hello, this is the world-famous Topeka Zoo." And it stuck. And I said to him in the interview, "How did you get the name world-famous?" They had bred for the very first time a golden eagle and raised the baby. And they were getting calls from all over the world and about this unique thing that they had done.
Why not? Branded with world-famous.
And he said to the people who answered the phone, he said, "From now on, answer the phone, world-famous Topeka Zoo," yeah. Because
he had a little bit of a marketing instinct, I think.
He had a very big, and he talked to us about marketing and how he marketed the zoo. We had one zoo director who said to us, "Billboards, best thing for you, better than anything else, really." So these are all little nuggets that...
Before we run out of time,
sure.
Chicago had some very famous gorillas. I mean, people would travel from around the world to see Sinbad or Otto or Bushman. Any anecdotes concerning any of those three?
Well, Bushman was, at one time, he got out of his cage. And someone had forgotten to lock a lock, and somebody said, "Get the phone," and then they never got back there to do the lock. And they looked, the keeper was cutting his food, and he kind of noticed off the corner of his eye, and there was Bushman standing in the corner. And he had the presence to move very slowly toward the door and open the door, and he got out, and there was Bushman. And, of course, the alarm was set off. Police were there and so forth. And... they ultimately scared him back into his cage with a small alligator.
Dog.
A small alligator. He was afraid
of.
A
small alligator?
Small alligator.
Like a stuffed alligator?
No,
or the real
one.
Thing?
Well, you're at the zoo. Of course, you have a real one.
Yes.
And they got him back in his cage. So that was one of the number of stories that we got from Marlon and many other zoo directors
we've
interviewed.
I love these anecdotes. Again, that website is?
The website is www.zoovideoarchive.org, and it'll give you a little teaser of some of those interviews. And if anybody wants to help us out, they can.
And the name of the book is The Ark in the Park, in reference to Lincoln Park Zoo. Mark Rosenthal, thank you so much.
Thank you.